Welcome to Zenergy, the interactive podcast providing resources for building a better life. I am Zen Ashe. I am a coach, a conduit, and a catalyst who launches humanity into greatness by accelerating mindset changes and replacing limitations with possibilities. And today is July 1st, and we're going to be talking about inner strength and dyslexia. And I want to introduce my guest, Cindy Breck. So. Yeah, say hi to the people. So I'm so grateful to have you here with me today. And to this is the first day of July. And it is also Minority Mental Health Awareness Month. That's a mouthful. You know, so some of the things we're going to be talking about will be about, you know, inner strength and about people facing challenges kind of and working through them and what you found in those areas that are helpful. So I titled this Inner Strength because I think that everybody has challenges in life. And sometimes we have to go inward to figure out how to deal with those challenges. We have to kind of find some grit or some determination or some belief in ourselves, you know? And so we have to find something, whatever we call it, some kind of strength to work through those difficulties and challenges. And sometimes we might not feel that strong.
I think we gain a lot of our strength personally when we take the time to sit back at our quietest moments.
So I agree. Yeah, I agree with that.
So, but yes, this will be definitely an interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I agree with you about reflection because I think sometimes we can be our harshest critics and we don't actually realize the strengths that we have. I think one thing that's great to do if you've never done it in the audience is to look at yourself objectively and say, what do I have going for me? You know, what are my strengths? You know, because a lot of times we focus on our weaknesses. We focus on all the things we don't like, all the things we feel we lack, but we don't sit there and count our blessings or count our strengths or count our uniquenesses, you know, because sometimes what we may see as a deficiency might actually just be a uniqueness about us.
Or a superpower.
A superpower. I like that. I like that.
I don't know. How do you say... I think people who compare themselves have a harder time getting out of that rut. When we sit back and we compare ourselves, because some people that are self-isolators or they take that moment to sit back and reflect, they don't reflect on the right thing. You've got to have, you can't shame yourself. You can't, and I know that people do, but you got to get out of it. And you have to not have so much self-doubt. And the biggest thing is you have to do positive self-talk. I know as a rec therapist for years working in geriatric psych or with people that had chemical dependency and stuff like that, you have to get a mindset. And the mindset is what powers you, empowers you, because it helps you get through this. And it's a lot of whether you're going through anxiety, depression, or anything, your mindset is what gets you through this. And also, for me personally, it's my faith walk. That's what gets me through. But you have to have that right mindset to get beyond the isolated moment that you're in. And whether it's dyslexia or, like, I've worked with so many people that have had, they lost a limb or something like that, you have to learn how to mentally move beyond that into a new mental zone that you can accept and at the same time learn through determination to get yourself through that and move beyond and learn a new balance in life. And I'll tell you, the people that get beyond that moment are a success. And I don't mean because you make money. I don't mean because, you've got all this popularity. No, because you had the inner strength in you to do it.
So. I like what you said so much about how sometimes when people reflect, they focus on the negative. It's like reflection isn't a strength for them. It's actually something they're using to pull themselves down. And you were talking about it is so important. And, you know, I just, you know, sometimes we say things, I say things, I won't say we, I say things, and I don't realize the drawbacks that can come with that. Sometimes I think, especially like pop psychology and you know, toxic positivity, like there's, it's, that's why I love conversations like this, because another person can bring in a perspective and say, hey, when you reflect this time, I know when you reflected last time, you might've been focusing on all the things you did wrong, but when you reflect this time, think about this, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's, you know, I'm a teacher, and there's a book that we've been focusing on about discipline and how to set up your classroom. And one of the things that they talk about is giving what to do directions. And they're saying that sometimes you give such vague directions that you leave kids confused. Mm-hmm. Because you think it's clear in your head and you said exactly what you wanted them to do, but they were not clear because you didn't specify, okay, when you do it this time, I want you to do it this way. So I think that was very helpful to me.
I'm very guilty of that because I think a lot in my head. Mm-hmm. And my husband's like, Cindy, okay, you said part of that in your head, because we've been together 33 years. He'll say, he says, I know you said part of that in your head, but the part you said out loud wasn't clear. Mm-hmm. You know, so sometimes I have to go back, and he gives me the time to explain it. But then I have to like tack what I thought in my head into the audible part of the conversation so that he could follow through and understand exactly what I'm saying. Because he, like in my story world, he's such an intricate part of the world building asset. And so I need him to clearly see and hear what I'm trying to convey. So there's a lot of conversation going on between us. So, I really genuinely believe that, people need to step out of their own comfort zone. And I have many times stepped out of my own comfort zone, put myself into a different circumstance. And then I've gotten to the point where I centered myself in a quiet, self-isolated moment. And I've taken that time with Christ to recalibrate my thinking and stuff like that. But the biggest thing is I want to understand other people. I want to be considerate to other people's ways of life, their thinking, and I want to be a positive example. I couldn't do any of that as a rec therapist unless I knew what drove me, what steered me, what pushed me. And I was at that point where a long time ago, it was like self-doubt, like you're not going to get through college, you're not going to do this or whatever, because like you could. With the dyslexia, it's like I would reverse the letters. Well, you can't hand an essay on that or something. But the more quiet I got in that moment, the more I understood that this is the way I'm made. This is who I am. How do I fix it? Not like fix it, like make myself perfect. No. How do I get my mindset around the fact, okay, how do I work with this? You know, the more I learned and all, the more I was like, gosh, I'm not a too bad of a person. You know, I'm not perfect, but hey, man, I've got determination, I've got resilience, and I've got compassion, and that's got a lot going for it. Now, what do I do with it? And my compassion is what steered me towards helping people that had some of the same situations or just being in the mental health field. You know, so I'm all for the quiet moments, but I'm made this way for a reason, and I have to learn how to work with it. So,
yeah, I think purpose is powerful. When you, first off, you know, I love the Serenity Prayer, and it kind of says, God, give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. You know, the courage to change the things I can and the wisdom to know the difference. Mm-hmm. And there are things that we cannot change about mm-hmm. ourselves. And to have the courage to say, okay, this is something I cannot change. it wouldn't matter how hard I tried. It wouldn't matter what I did. It wouldn't matter how much money I had. I cannot change this. So I'm going to accept that. But I'm also going to see the good in that, because just because it is the way it is doesn't mean it's bad. It just is. You know, it may not be the same as somebody else. And you said something powerful about comparison. You know, I think there was someone famous that said something like, comparison is a thief of joy. You know, I'm paraphrasing that. And I agree with that. There's a way to compare ourselves to others where we are inspired by them. Mm-hmm. And we want to, if they did it, I can too. That's a positive comparison. But yes, to say I'm not at that point and they are, and what's wrong with me, or, you know, I should be further. I think that's in America. I know, I don't know about other places in the world, because I have people who listen from all over the place, you know. So if you're somewhere else and you want to put some comments on this video later, you know, if you're somewhere else in the world, I know in America, we are like, by 20, I should be here. And by 25, I should be here. And by 30, I should be here. And by 35, I should be here. And I think that that saps a lot of our strength, because when we don't hit those milestones, even though they're goals, we feel like failures.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a lot better to have smaller goals and progress goals than to have these fixed, by this age, I should have kind of thing. You know, and I think that I think we can also fuel our strength and sap our strength.
And I would agree with you.
Harrison's, I think a lot of times we sap our strength rather than fueling our strength. You know?
Oh my gosh. When I was in elementary school, because I had an IEP program set up and I was in learning disability classes, I compared myself. And then I found that a lot of the times I was doing something different, but maybe a little bit better than the person that had the same, had an IEP and stuff like that for them. And then it's like, I sat back instead of like looking around the room and seeing, hey, all of us have IEPs in this learning disability classes. What strengths did that person have that I didn't have? And how could we work together? I have learned, because every time I turn around, someone will say, you know what? I have dyslexia. You know what I mean? And I know that I'm not into categorizing and labeling people, but I know this fits into this new word, this neurodivergent learner and stuff. But there's something beautiful about the brain. Mm-hmm. How beautiful dyslexics see things. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite authors, Rick Riordan, his son, as I understand it, the Percy Jackson, if I understood it from my readings and stuff, and this from my brain from a long time ago, he wrote the Percy Jackson story based off his son who's dyslexic. But I mean, there's pros and cons. Yeah, you have issues with, you know, you might see things differently as far as your punctuation might not be right. You're not as good with the letters you swap around or the numbers and stuff like that. But there's such an inner strength about the difference, because you see things so different too. I see things, and I really want to stress on the positive end about the beauty of being different and having, you know, not being like everybody else and not comparing yourself. Once I stepped back and stopped looking at myself as being, comparing myself to somebody else, I found more beauty in me because of what I could offer. And that was the determination. That was the commitment. And I learned and I found where I could thrive. You know, I found I did really well underneath an IEP because those teachers, they had a different level of compassion about them because they knew how to work with kids that had issues. They demonstrated a resilience. And because of their resilience and their commitment to me, in their adaptability, like you as a teacher, you're able to adapt. It helped me better because they crafted lessons around me, not so that I could fall between the cracks, but so that they could help my mindset lift myself up. And I just found a lot of strength in that, but I got the right teachers. Not all the time, but my sixth grade teacher, Mr. Potter, he was, believe it or not, he used recreational therapy in his classroom, in his arsenal of tools to work with us kids. And that's one of the reasons why I went in as a rec therapist.
Hmm.
He was an asset to our group. And he taught the mainstream class. It was other teachers that taught the other classes, but they crafted their program around me and what I needed to succeed. And it was those quiet times that I got to understand they believed in me. Mm-hmm. And so I need to start believing in myself. And I think once you get away from that comparing yourself, and you start looking at who you are and what you have to offer as far as kindness, compassion, you will do great. But I think success depends on your determination. Not how much money you make or anything, but I think your success depends on that.
I agree. Determination is really powerful. I agree that belief in yourself is so powerful. You know, I was watching this video and they were talking about how it seems like belief is what separates a lot of times the rich from the average, is that their level of belief in themselves is so high, it's almost delusional. You know, and they just believe they can, they believe they will, they believe that they are meant to, you know, mm-hmm. It's like they have this idea of, I was put here for this. I have these things inside of me. I'm going to get this done. And it is such a strong belief that it fuels everything. And one of my books that I love, love, love is The Alchemist.
Okay.
And there is a line in there that says, when you've made a decision, the whole universe conspires to help you. You know, when you really set your mind that you're going to whatever it is, you know, start this business or become better at this or that or the other. And you are just, I'm going to do it. You know, I can do it. The whole universe is conspiring to help you. And I think, again, that's strength. Like sometimes we need those mentors, we need those teachers, we need those people that come along and they pull out of us what's in there, because we don't know how to get it out sometimes. You know, we don't know how to tap into that inner whatever it is, you know, mm-hmm. that inner reservoir. But sometimes when we have that belief or even just that hope, I really want this, I really believe that I can, you know, and we're open and receptive, those people come. And there's another saying, like, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I am very grateful that I've seen that happen a lot in my life, when I feel like, okay, I've done everything I know to do. And sometimes you just take a step back and like, okay, I don't know what the next thing is. But then a teacher comes or a mentor comes or somebody says something to you and then you're, oh, you know, and it's guidance, you know? So I love the fact that we do have teachers and mentors and guides and even strangers that sometimes speak life into us, or they, like I said, they tap into pulling out whatever is in us that we don't know necessarily how to do it. And they foster a belief. I've had so many people, like you said, when I did start to doubt, they would believe in me and it would re-spark my belief in me. It was almost like a candle, like your candle's going out mm-hmm. and somebody comes and they relight it.
Mm-hmm.
Just when you're about to, you know, flicker out and go, you know, go whatever you would say, what if they, you know, you're extinguished, but just before you extinguish, they relight you. And then suddenly when you're relit, sometimes when you're relit, it's so invigorating because they poured so much into you that now you feel that spark, you feel that light in you, and it gives you a second wind.
Yes. You know? And I think we need that second wind. And I think it's good to experience the downtimes.
Mm.
I think the downtimes, like I said earlier, I think the downtimes are more impacting than experiencing the highs, because that's when we collect and that's when we're more receptive to take in, quiet our minds down to take in what people are saying and the constructive feedback. I was fortunate to have a mom that was very very much a cheerleader. But my grandmother, she was the bomb. I think there was something about that generation that, I mean, a woman coming out, running a business. I mean, she helped my grandfather with his business. And just strong-willed women. Mm. Beautiful. But she didn't let, we weren't given the time to have a pity party. Mm. In the self-doubts, because you have to find a way to get out of it. But she always said, take the time to take a deep breath, you know, in that moment to soak it up. And my mom, she was very much be thankful for where you are, how you've been blessed, be thankful what you've got, whether it's the clothes on the back or it's what it's got or what you have in your head, you know? And my thing is, I grew up with a twin sister. Mm-hmm. And so my twin sister was straight A's, she was a dynamic. Always, I mean, she's even valedictorian of her college, the whole thing. And I was always always right behind her. You know what I mean? But it didn't, at first it kind of bothered me, but growing after I kind of got a different perspective, it's like she is who she is. And that's where the comparing comes in at. I am where I am. I'm a total separate person. Yeah, we look similar, but we're totally separate. And working through that self-doubt, that frustration, and that level of comparison, I found an inner strength that came through learning to view things through a unique way as if it's mine was not a setback for my dyslexia or being in a learning disability class, but it was a gift. I'm more empathetic. I'm more creative. I'm more willing to listen to people's perspectives, to hear them out. And I think that's what makes me okay, you know? So that's just a learning curve. It's different, but I always had that twin sister that was that one step, or I felt when I was younger, better. But now we're so tight and so close. It's beautiful. You know, there's not the issues. So.
Yeah. You know, I love what you said about, you know, this wasn't a setback. This was a gift. And there is a guy, I cannot think of his name right now, but if people are in a manifestation, they're probably going to know who he is. And he talks about reframing. Mm-hmm. He basically says, like, when you get to the end of your day, and a lot of times, a lot of us reflect on our day, and some of us ruminate on our day at the end of the day, and we think about all the stuff we did wrong, or we thought we did wrong. And he says, stop doing that. Stop ruminating, because it's over. It's over. But he was like, but the story you tell yourself isn't over. And he said, and you can sit there and reframe the day in your mind. You know, you can reframe it in a way that gives you inspiration. You know, so like when you said it wasn't a setback, it was a gift. You know, I remember one experience that happened to me, and this is an example of reframing. I was in college and I was waitressing at Papa Do's. And that's a seafood restaurant in this area. I don't know where you are, so I don't know if they have it where you are. But anyway, I had just gotten this great review, you know, this great performance review. And then like 2 days later, 2 or 3 days later, I got fired. And I was so like out of the blue. I didn't know what had happened. I was so confused. I came home and my dad worked shift work. So he was actually, you know, about to go to sleep when I walked into the house, because I was still living at home at this time. And so he was like, I thought you were supposed to be at work. I was like, I just got fired. He was like, I thought you just got a great performance review. And I was like, I did. And he was like, what'd you get fired for? I said, I don't know. And he said, well, it doesn't really matter. He was like, do you want to be a waitress for the rest of your life? I said, no. And he said, it could have been they needed to lay off people because they had too many people. They weren't making money. It could be that the manager saw some things in you and thought, hey, she's going to take my job one day. I need to get rid of her, whatever. It could be anything. It doesn't matter. He said, if you don't want to be a waitress for the rest of your life, they did you a favor. You're going to get a paycheck. You know what I'm saying? You already know that that paycheck's coming from your last whatever hours you did. Now you're going to take this time when you would be at work and go look for a job that you want to do that's in your field, because now you got a little bit of extra time. You know,
when one door closes, another opens.
Yeah. When he said they did you a favor.
Yep.
It was like my dad saying to me, you didn't just get fired. They did you a favor. Now go get a job in your field. He reframed it for me. And, you know, I think back to that moment because it was a 2-minute conversation. Right. But I could have been devastated for the rest of my life. Like, I just got a great performance review and now I just got fired and I don't know what happened. And, you know, I could have had this insecurity. I could have had this fear. I could have had this trauma. I could have had all this stuff.
But it was your dad saying, I believe in you.
Yes, exactly. My dad reframed it for me. And he, through reframing it for me, he completely erased this whatever. I wasn't even worried about the firing me at that moment. I was like, yeah, they did me a favor, you know? It was so powerful. I tell people, you don't know what was small to you can be life changing. I'm about to be 55 years old. That happened 30 years ago. I still tell the story.
Yep.
You know?
Words are powerful. Words can make, and they can make, break you. You know what I mean? But it's what you tell yourself is the most important thing, and what you collect to store in your rented space of your brain that keeps you fueled, that determination. And you kept something that was so original to you that you thrived on, that made you persevere through everything, you know? And I totally agree. It's reframing those words in your head to help make you succeed. That opened up another door, another possibility, another opportunity for you. You know what I mean? Yes. I could have taken dyslexia from my teachers, from my parents, and said, you know what, I could have gotten suppressed. I could have gotten like, this does not work. I'm never going to be anything. Instead, I was like, you know what? Okay. Instead of looking at this like this is my kryptonite, I'm going to look at this like this is my superpower. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I am going to succeed because I have a dream to see something unfold on paper, to become or do something that, because I love challenges personally. I love challenges. I'm going to do something with this and not let it stop me. And that's where I started putting pen to paper, literally pen to paper, not fingers to keyboard.
Hey, Zenergy listeners, you know, there are authors that I interview that I really find myself resonating with because we have a similar experience as an author. We have a similar writing journey, and writing kind of means the same thing to us. And Jennifer D. Torseth was one of those authors that I interviewed recently. And, you know, she talks about writing as something that she has to do, as something that kind of makes her feel connected to herself. And she is an indie author of dystopian and sci-fi books, including The Emergent Sarah, The Emergent Sam, the paranormal romance Adele Wolf, and the children's book, Oh No, It's a Croc. And she describes her books as really kind of autobiographical, but also delving into a lot of things that people don't talk about, that coming of age journey, that exploring our authenticity. And she describes her children's book as something really fun. She said that sometimes children's books aren't as fun as she would hope they would be. And as a parent, you know, she loves to read books to her kids that are fun. So she wrote one. You know, there's that saying, if there's a book out there that you feel that needs to be written and you can't find it, you got to write it yourself. So she did that. She was born and raised in Texas. And when she's not writing about alien sludge or sexy shapeshifters, you can find her on her porch enjoying a cup of coffee and spending time with her four-leggers. So I hope that you will check out her books. It's Jennifer D. Torseth, and you can see some of her books in this slideshow. So check out her books, and I hope that you enjoy them. May you walk in synergy.
I wrote Lonely Stone. when we did the pen to paper, and I just loved writing. But had I not had like you, that parent that fueled you, that helped you reframe things, where would you be a teacher today? You don't know.
I don't know. I think about that experience, and I know myself, because in the past I have had a chance to, I have a tendency to ruminate, why did this happen? What did I do? What did I do wrong? Get myself into a frizzy, right?
Yeah.
And I've tried to stop doing that, but every now and then I still do it. But that was definitely my tendency back then. And for him to just stop that and just say, they did you a favor, go look for another job in your field, the mm-hmm. field that you're studying in college, go find you a job there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was just so powerful, you know? So I wanted to switch gears. We've been kind of talking about strength and things that lead to it. And I wanted to kind of switch gears to kind of diving more into whatever you wanted to talk about your book and about your journey with dyslexia and whatever you had on your mind to share with my audience today. So I wanted to kind of open up the floor to you for that discussion and kind of let you lead it.
Oh, so you're not going to ask me a question now.
I'm going to ask you any question that comes to my mind as I'm listening to you. Definitely. We're still going to have a conversation.
Okay.
I definitely wanted you to make sure that you were able to share whatever you had on your heart when you were signing up, you know.
What I have on my heart is I want people, if they're dreaming, I want them to dream big and never give up on that dream. I would not be where I'm at now if I didn't continue with my dream and make my dream a reality. If I'd have let things stop me, anybody stop me, whether it's their words or their ideas, I wouldn't have a book series that's totally completed. Hmm. I would not have gotten the blessings to experience so much of what I've gotten to do. I've gotten to live through a character who is freaking awesome. She's got her own flaws too, but, and I've gotten to meet some of the most absolute amazing people. There's just something dynamic about meeting other authors and even podcasters like yourself. There's just a deeper, I don't want to say other people aren't deeper. There's just a more, there's something about the arts, the understanding, that this group of people that are just dynamic. And I love the receptiveness in conversation, the level of open-mindedness to venture to do. And there seems to be such a level of determination with people in the arts field and stuff like that. I love the creative aspect. I've got a daughter who's extremely creative and a son, but in a total different aspect. But I don't know. I just have to say, I want to stress to people to not give up on something that haunts them, that niggles at their mind, that just they need, that they're mentally obsessing about. Go do it. You know? So I can't stress that enough. I don't know. I wrote the Theron series. I didn't give up on myself, even though I could have. With having an IEP, being in an IEP class for a long time, with having dyslexia or anything like that, I learned during those moments to have resilience, to have compassion. It made me more flexible. But there is something that I don't know if you've interviewed many people. I know you said this was Mental Health Awareness Month, but I don't know if people are really, who don't have dyslexia, realize the pros and cons to it. You know what I mean? Do you know?
No, I don't. I, as a teacher, we get a tiny bit of training, like about an hour of dyslexia training every year. And I've never interviewed anybody who had dyslexia as their topic. So you could share whatever you feel is important. Cause like I said, I have a tiny bit, like I said, about an hour of training every year, just with techniques and what we need to do. And, you know, just that's kind of it. So I don't feel like I'm by any means an expert or even very knowledgeable. And I've had only a few. I've taught on and off for 31 years. And I probably in that time have had 5 or 6 identified dyslexic students.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. So I can only take it from like my personal experience, because I think there's different forms of dyslexia. I don't like know everything. I could just say what I've experienced, but to give you what they would label as the cons of dyslexia is like, when you're as a writer, you misspell words, you misplace punctuation. You're inconsistent with your grammar. I am notorious for putting like the last few words of what should be at the beginning of a sentence at the end and vice versa. I just do it. My husband, like I said, would have to sometimes say, hey, clarify this or something. As a writer, dyslexics have a tendency to write slower, and definitely reading is slower. I didn't start reading until I was really in third grade, when my reading teacher caught it. And she's like, oh, we're dealing with a different situation here. And at the same time, thinking of cons, you know, we discussed, you deal with the self-doubt, the shame and stuff like that. But this is a big one. Sometimes, personally, when I was younger, I had difficulty dealing with structure. Mm. And that is something else dyslexics have an issue with. Now, bring it on, baby. I want all the structure I could have. I have a routine to my writing process, even down to a French vanilla iced coffee. That structure is what sets the mindset that I have to get into in order before I sit down and I write. For me, the reason why I have said dyslexia for me is a superpower is because there's something that goes on with the brain in somebody that's dyslexic. We see things more vivid. The storytelling process, it's like running a video or movie through your head. And I don't know how to say it, but the words just kind of come out, but I'm like watching a movie in my head as I'm typing.
Hmm.
So, and I'm not the only one that has experienced that. I mean, I'm part of a writer's guild, and I know some other people that are different to varying degrees of dyslexic. Now, mine doesn't really come out real strong unless I'm trying to force an issue, or I'm extremely, like, I'm on that tired edge, you know. Now, it will come out more so if I'm trying to explain something. I'm surprised. That's another story. But dyslexics, I think when they write, and I think I could sometimes tell because I'll look up the person I'm reading to know like their back history, because like, what's her name? The lady, Rebecca Yarros, she wrote Fourth Wing. She's not dyslexic, but she wrote her disability in there. I like to know authors who write what they know or what they experience. It kind of draws me to the story a little bit more. I think people that experience it or go through like a physical ailment or something like that, like Rebecca has, or myself, we just have a way of putting a little bit more emotion, depth to a story to bring a richness out. And I think that's probably why, what's his name? Rick Riordan is such a great author to me. He experienced as a parent what his kid was going through and stuff like that. But anyhow, I don't know. I think that's the biggest thing I would have to say in all of my stuff that I would not want people to give up on their dreams. And I don't look at a con like pros and cons. I don't look at the negative side of it as something wrong or bad. How can you take that con, as some people would put it, and turn it into something beautiful that it helps you move through things? In other words, break the rules, break the silence, get better, do something with it, be determined.
I like that. Break the rules, you know, do something with it. Mm-hmm. You know,
we're the only one that holds ourselves back. Sure. I mean, especially in America. Other countries, cultivation worlds and stuff like that, they have other things to deal with. But in America, we have that, especially more so now, we need to get messages out there, positive messages and stuff like that. And we need to show, whether it's a woman's strength or whatever, we need to keep moving forward, you know, and not give up, you know?
I agree with you on that. You know, I think someone seeing you are struggling and saying, okay, I see there's something else going on here, is really powerful. You know, a few years ago, I was on some social media and they had these things that pop up and they, you know, you might have such and such and such, take this test to see how high you score. It was basically an ADD thing because it had all these descriptions and I'm like, oh my gosh, that sounds like me. And I took the test that they had and I scored like 98%, like I was like way, way up there. And I'm like, you know, I don't even know at this point if I even want to get tested for ADD or ADHD. I've probably got so many coping mechanisms that I put in place. You know, like, for example, I'll tell you one. My sister and I would always talk about how everybody else is seen in the world. They would get hyper from drinking coffee. Right? It would rev them up. It would give them energy. For me, coffee is what I drink when I want to mellow out, when I want to calm down.
Okay.
And that is a technique for people that have ADD or ADHD, that stimulants have the opposite effect on us, that a stimulant for everybody else brings them up. For us, because we're already overstimulated, it actually counteracts the stimulus in us and it mellows us out. So I will drink coffee, like at least one cup almost every day, because that's how I come down. Mm-hmm. And I come down and now I'm at the normal rate. Now I'm not moving in 5 million different directions. Or like another thing, I started journaling in fifth grade. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And then I started journaling at night a lot of times because I would say, this is what I would tell people. I can't go to bed. I got to download my brain. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I would literally just brain dump onto the page because otherwise my brain would be going so fast, I couldn't sleep. Mm-hmm. So just those two things right there are symptoms of ADD, right?
Yeah.
And there were things that I figured out how to deal with. I think that there are so many people who don't get diagnosed, or they don't, I think I'm frozen a little bit here. They don't get diagnosed. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Cause it looks like my, looks like I froze on the screen, but, it's great when you do. Cause I wonder if let's say I do have ADD, cause I still haven't gotten tested. I wonder if I had gotten quote diagnosed, would it have made a difference, or did I just naturally figure out ways to deal with it?
You probably figured it. Sounds like you figured out ways to deal with it. But Zen, even what you said about brain dumping in the journal, I cannot tell you the power of that. That is so huge. I did it. I mean, writing in a journal, it was like you could close the door on all the stuff that went on that day, and you compartmentalize it, and you put it up on a shelf once you experienced it, once you went through it, you know, and it was yesterday's business. And now you reframed your mind for something new to experience for another day. I mean, that's so key. Now, I never knew about the counteraction with coffee. I mean, I've just always thought coffee hyped you up.
Yeah, not everybody. See that? Not everybody.
Yeah, this is my French vanilla iced coffee. I love making it.
Yeah, I think that when, like you said, somebody noticed something was off and they were able to help you and to get you the help you needed. So I think that that's really powerful. So how did you decide what you wanted to write about? Like what genre, all that kind of stuff? Like what was your author journey like into becoming the type of writer that you are?
Well, okay. So journaling, I always wanted to be a writer, and I did a lot of journaling to cope with life and stuff like that. But in reality, I always had like a movie playing in my head, and it just seemed like these reoccurring thoughts just kept playing over my head, little scenes, little skits, not auditorio, just like scenes, you know? So finally I started writing them down. The more I wrote them down, the more they came. And so by the time I was done, I had this little notebook of all these scenes, and I'm like, what do I do with this? So I stuck them up on a board. I kind of worked with them and I shifted them around. And then I started going to writing groups. I joined a writing guild. And I learned how to put them and apply them to the three-act structure. The more I fed my dream, the more I did positive self-talk, the more my determination drove me to see the story unfold about my character in the Theron series. And it was exhilarating to see images that were in my mind come to birth, reimagined on paper. And then you add the sense, you add the dialogue, the feel, everything to it. It was just like a total different level of immersion into that world other than just what was going on in my head. So that determination just kind of fueled me, and I never gave up on it. In the support of the writing guild that I joined, and their understanding of, oh boy, she's not always the best at putting her period where it needs to go, supported me. It helped me succeed. I've also been blessed to have one of the most amazing men in my life, and that's my husband. And I am just so blessed with him. He has always been extremely positive and supportive of my dream, of my journey in life, and definitely not sitting down and having a pity party, but getting up and doing something with your life. And with our kids, we have two kids. It's like, hey, get up, move, do something with your life. Not that you can't take that breath, but still it's important. And I think my character Callie in my story, she's kind of like, I use my daughter as part of my protagonist and stuff like that. I have moments where she has to reframe her world so that she can move forward and stuff like that. And I think that's important and stuff like this. But personally, my journey all comes from the support I have around me in the vision that I unfolded or saw in my head. And I like to jokingly say my character, Callie Tresham, stalked my thoughts because she, in essence, did, you know. But no, that's just pretty much where it came from. But outside of that, my husband and I owned a 200-year-old historical watermill. So we're into the preservation of history. And so I incorporated historical realism within my story world so that you could actually go to the restaurants where Callie Tresham, this fictional character, where she eats at. You could go to where she works. It's just that she's not real. So I anchored her world out of elements of reality and stuff like that. And whether it's in book two or three, you're in Italy or Egypt or another country. I'm very much a history buff. I believe history is significant to our preservation of the current world, society, and so forth. And I just love history. So the combination of the Therans, Secrets Beneath Scars, which is the title of book one, the Therans, they're stewards of history. And I am a National Treasure buff. So the movie. And so I love elements of that. So, but yeah, I mean, that's just kind of where I'm at and how I got on my journey with writing my world, or I should say do trilogy world, because there's two worlds within the three books that I have written for the Theron series.
I think history is really important. I think it's really sad that women in general have been obscured in history, and so much that we have contributed has been ascribed to men. And I think that a lot of what's been happening in the last several years is there's been a lot of discovery of, oh, wait, women were hunters and women were warriors and women were leaders and women were all these things that we ascribe to men. And I think that when people know history, really know history, not the version that's come down to us that has been
the one that's been written by the victor.
Yes. When people really know history and they're able to share it, I think it's so it balances the scales. Mm-hmm. And also it undoes some of the negative conditioning of inequality and just sexism, misogyny that has been so much a part of many societies. And I love to see books that have women doing things that are not, quote, necessarily traditional things, you know, where the women are the heroines, the women are the explorers, the women are just being authentic women, not in some box that yeah. somebody put them in. They're just being people, you know, because the idea of women as people is kind of foreign to some people. They want to make us out to be robots or, you know, just these certain tiny roles, these very, very tiny roles that we can play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have a friend who, she's really dynamic. She's blind and she is a history buff and she's got a degree in history. But every time I turn around, she's telling me something about somebody who was a female in real life who did the unthinkable, the undeniable, whether it was helping people during World War II, they were a spy to help break a code or whatever. She's a history buff. Awesome. We love to chat. Now I like history in a different aspect. I like the archaeological kind of history. She's into the person history. You know what I mean? The history behind the person, what made them do, like there was this one, female, she helped George Washington, you know, as a spy and stuff like that. She's really like into that. I like the history of the setting of like the Keister Watermill that we used to own and stuff like that. And I like creating, using legends or myths and tweaking them. Cause I jokingly say I'm a legend sleuth. I'll spend hours researching, what somebody's written about, a legend or a location and tie that a legend and a location together. So yes, I definitely love history. I love history that's even around catacombs, cemeteries, that kind of stuff too. But I do think history has been written by the victor. And I do think women have been lost. Their voice is not heard as much. But I think it's becoming more prevalent, more known that women have done a lot behind the scenes to help succeed in our endeavors as a country and so forth, you know?
I definitely agree with that. So we're kind of coming down to the end of the hour. So if you want to tell people where they can find you, tell them a little bit more about like the titles of their books and where your books can be found and things like that.
Okay. So the first book that's out is The Therons, Secrets Beneath Scars. And it is one book one of the trilogy. Book two and three will be launched, definitely book two next year. And you can find it on Amazon. There are some bookstores that my book series is in. And I'm working to get them in different locations right now, but definitely Amazon and also on Kindle Unlimited. Also, I do write short stories related to the series because I like to always fill in the backstory about a protagonist's parents or why she's got these powers and these gifts and stuff like that. Because I do write about supernatural with the power of sight and stuff like that. So I like to give a little bit of world building examples and short stories to anchor a reader into it. But you don't have to read the prequels or anything like that in order to just pick up the main book in the series. So, but yep, that's pretty much it.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We were talking about inner strength and then we got to talk about, you know, your journey with dyslexia and how you did not let dyslexia keep you from your dreams. And that you're encouraging everybody to not let anything that they have, you know, that could be considered a hindrance or an obstacle keep them from their dreams. And if they're looking at the video, they can see your information kind of streaming across the bottom. I will put that in the podcast notes where you can be found. And I want to thank you for joining us. And if you have anything else that you want to say before we sign off, I'm going to let you know.
I wanted to actually say thank you to you. Oh, I appreciate you giving voice to authors and other people like that so that we could get our messages out there.
You're welcome. And I do have books on Amazon as well. So if you look me up, Zinashe, I would normally show them to you, but for some reason, my camera is frozen. I don't know how to unfreeze it right now. So I can't show them to you today, but if you look up Zinashe, Zenase, I do have 5 books on Amazon. I have a children's book. I have a guided journal. I have a planner and I have 2 memoirs. And so you can definitely check me out and check out the podcast Zenergy. And may you guys walk in Zenergy. Have a great day.
Take care, Zenashe. I really appreciate it.